This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. I've got another hour of old-time radio crime for you this week, beginning with Dragnet. We'll hear The Big Check from August 31st, 1950. After that, it's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe and The Fox's Tale, his story from May 23rd, 1950.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a forgery detail. An accomplished check forger is at work in your city. His victims, small businessmen. You know his M.O., you don't know his identity. Your job, get him.
If you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke extra mild Fatima. Yes, Fatima is the king-size cigarette which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make it extra mild. To give Fatima a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette. That's why Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast. Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself. Best of all, long cigarettes.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, February 4th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of forgery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Captain Elliott. My name's Friday. I was on the way home from the office, and it was 8:25 p.m. when I got to Collis Avenue. Number 4656.
Joseph, that you?
Yeah, Ma.
We're in the living room. We have company.
Oh, that's so?
Hello, Joe.
Well,
you remember Mary Fowler, don't you, Joseph?
I sure do. How are you, Miss Fowler?
Just fine, Joe, thank you. Doing some shopping out this way and thought I'd stop by and have a cup of tea with your mother.
Well, it's good to see you. How are things in the old neighborhood, huh?
Oh, pretty much the same. Oh, Miss Daly, remember her?
Mm-hmm.
Finally died.
Oh,
I suppose it was for the best, though. I was just telling your mother. Jim and Louise Watson finally moved. Jim got a new job out by Altadena.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah. My, you're certainly looking fine, Joe. Don't you wear your police uniform anymore?
Oh, my, no, Mary. Joseph's in the detective bureau now. He hasn't worn his uniform for years.
Oh, that's right. I remember now. That note you sent with your Christmas card year before last. What do you do now, Joe?
Forgery detail. My partner and I handle bum check cases.
My, that certainly must be interesting.
Have you had your dinner, Joseph?
Yes, ma'am. I stopped at a place out in Santa Monica and had some.
Yes, well, Mary brought me some nice coffee cakes, pineapple filling. Wouldn't you like one with a cup of coffee, Joseph?
No, I don't know, Ma.
You sit down in your chair there and rest yourself. You always look so tired. I have no idea how hard they work, those young fellows, Mary.
You remember Genevieve, don't you, Joe? My oldest girl?
Oh, yeah, sure. How is she?
Oh, just fine. Lots of boyfriends, as usual. Going out all the time.
Oh, that's good.
She asked to be remembered to you. I think you and Jen were stuck on each other at one time, weren't you, Joe?
Oh, we went to a couple of dances in high school. Well, I think she started going steady with another fella, didn't she?
Young girl. Never know when they're well off.
Here's your coffee, Joseph. Set it here on the end table.
Thanks. I don't think I can use it, Ma.
It's delicious coffee cake. You smell how fresh it is.
Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, my, 8:45. I should have left half an hour ago.
Oh, you have to go, Mary? Seems our visits are almost so short.
Well, I got a lot of ironing to do, and I have to make Carl's lunch. He's always so fussy about his lunches.
Yes, well, I'll get your coat.
Well, it's nice seeing you again, Joe. Do you want to be remembered to Genevieve?
Yeah, tell her hello, will you, Miss Fowler?
If you're over our way, be sure and drop in and see us, won't you? Genevieve's home, the office by 6. She often says she'd like to see you again.
Oh,
thanks. Well, good night, Joe. You be sure to come and see us now. Jen will be looking forward to it.
Okay, Miss Fowler. Good night.
Yeah, and I'll show you to the door, Mary. You're
in the neighbor's room. All right,
dear. I wouldn't do take care of
yourself
now.
Good night.
Good night, Mary. Nice person, Mary. She's having a hard time trying to find a husband for Genevieve. But...
yeah. Hey, Ma, I'm not very hungry. I can't eat now.
No? Oh, it seems such a shame to waste. That lovely coffee cake. Ben and you still in the same cage,
Yeah, same one.
Seems to me it's taking an awfully long time.
Well, we've been on it 2 months, yeah.
I'll never understand it. Well, people write bad checks. Always get caught.
Well, it's easy living while it lasts.
Now, you know what the man's handwriting is like. Don't you know who the man is?
Well, we think so, Ma. We're not sure. There's hundreds of check men who work almost alike. Some of them even look alike. There's always a big enough field to pick from. Our problem's picking the right one.
Yeah, I don't know much about it, but the whole thing seems kind of silly to me.
Well, how's that?
What's this man supposed to be doing? Going around your small neighborhood stores, cashing $15, $20 checks? If he got himself a job, he'd probably earn that much in one day doing good, honest work.
Yeah. Say, Ben didn't call before I got home, did he?
Wasn't he with you?
Oh, he was going to interview one of the bum check victims on his way home, a grocery store owner down in Highland Park. It might be him now.
Oh, now, don't hang on that phone, Joseph. Your coffee gets cold.
Yeah. Friday talking.
This is Ben, Joe. Got a partial identification from that grocer. It's nothing great.
Which mugshot did he like?
Stanley Buback. Grocer thinks it might have been the guy who pushed the check. He can't be sure.
33 bum checks passed. Same M.O. Not one positive identification. Something's phony, isn't it?
It's got me stopped. We know the endorsements on every one of those checks was written by the same guy. He used practically the same story on every one of his victims.
Yeah.
Those 33 people are either blind or they're kidding us.
Well, there's only one other answer.
Huh?
We're looking for the wrong man. For 2 months and 2 days in different shopping districts throughout the city, a man described as well-dressed and middle-aged had been passing worthless checks on independent neighborhood businessmen. Most of the victims were proprietors of small shops, meat markets, liquor stores, grocery stores. In none of the cases was the check written for more than $25. With the help of the stats office and our record bureau, we'd gone through the list of experienced checkmen until we found one man whose description and M.O. matched perfectly with that of the suspect. The man's name was Stanley Buback.
We can't locate him, Captain. Another thing, we can't get a positive identification from any of the victims.
And find a suspect they can't identify. You've been tracking the guy for 2 months. What's the big mystery?
Well, we tabbed the man as Stanley Buback, and his record and his M.O., his description, they all tie in perfectly. Now we're not sure it's him.
What do you mean?
Well, if it is Buback, it's almost a sure thing that one of the victims could have made him on one of his mug shots. None of them can make up their minds.
Look, maybe one of you two would like to be captain of forgery for a day, sit in this office and listen to complaints come in over that phone about this guy, the front office, neighborhood businessmen's clubs, retail merchants. They tell me they're troublesome in passing them on to you. Now, whoever this paper hanger is, we want him, and we want him fast.
Lousy little $20 checks. We'd probably have a lot better target if he'd try something bigger.
And don't think he and 100 other check men like him don't know that. You won't find them stealing company paychecks and flooding the town with paper. They take it from the little guy, and they take it in small amounts, but add up those small amounts at the end of the year, and they'll scare you.
Well, that's the rotten part about it. None of those victims can afford a bad check.
That grocer Donnelly stands on his feet all day and at a profit of $10, $15. He gets tagged with one bad check, and he's working for nothing.
We've got bulletins out on the suspect to all the small businessmen in town. They've all been alerted.
Excuse me. Captain Elliott. Yeah, okay, Don, right away. Don Myers. He went over the handwriting those last three checks, wants to see you.
Okay.
How about that special bulletin you got out to the prisons on Stanley Buback? Any replies?
Nothing yet, Skipper.
All right, stay on it.
Right, let's go, Ben.
Sour deal. I'd give a right arm for a line on this guy.
Yeah. Well, it'd move a lot faster if somebody'd help us follow those checks closer. The way it's running now, we hear about the paper 2 weeks after it's been cashed.
That Buback thing isn't helping much. No use trying another line till we get it settled.
Hi, Don.
Oh, hi. Just finished up on those last three checks that came in. You want to give them a look?
How do they shape up?
Well, you can see for yourself. Right here.
Yeah?
Here are the three I just went over.
Mm-hmm.
And here are half a dozen bad ones for cash last month. Now, the endorsements on this half doesn't match perfectly.
And those other three?
Well, I'd say they were endorsed by the same person. Now, look here.
Huh?
You can notice the capital letters. Now, you still handle them the same way. Disconnected from the other letters in the first name. See?
Yeah, yeah.
But he connects the capitals in the last name. See?
Mm-hmm.
Not very bright.
Yeah.
Not much doubt in my mind. All the other handwriting factors tie in. The form, skill, shading. They all match up. The movement, the terminals, they're all the same for my money. Yeah, here, the way he writes the lowercase letters. Yeah, that cinches it for me.
How's that done?
Well, here. The inclination of the terminal stroke on the S. See it? Degree of slant above the horizontal is just about 55 degrees in all cases.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the finger movement and his capitals have plenty of freedom. They're not shaded much.
Yeah.
Nothing like this in his lowercase letters, though, you see? Here.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Not much freedom here. Lots of shading. And the pressure on the lifts. Here. They match
yeah.
up.
Mm-hmm.
Same on the downstroke. Now, I'd say the skill is medium in all cases. Embellishments, both class two.
No changes at all in the style?
Oh, he made the signatures look a little different. All eight factors match up, though. It's the same person.
All we have to do is find him.
Hey, how about this fellow Stanley Bubeck? I thought you had him tapped.
Now, we're not too sure about him, but it's the only line we got to work on, so it'll have to do for now.
Mm-hmm.
Romero, the man in the office to see you and Joe. Name's Loomis.
Right, Fred. Be there in a minute.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Don. We'll check you later, huh?
Sure, okay. See you.
Let's go, Ben. How do you do? You Mr. Loomis?
Yes, sir. Sergeant Romero?
No, this is Sergeant Romero here. My name's Friday.
Oh, how are you? You do?
What can we do for you?
It's about these checks, Sergeant. These right here.
Yeah?
You see, I run a delicatessen out on Sunset, and a few days ago, a new customer came in for a few things and paid for them with these checks. He came in twice.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I got the checks back today. They're no good. I tried to look up the man at the address he gave, but there's no such address.
Mm-hmm.
You can see, one's for $15, the other one's for $20.
Yeah.
Reason I asked for you men is because I know the man who runs the drugstore across the street, George Holmquist. He had some bad checks about a month ago. He said you took care of him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. Do you recall the man who passed these checks, Mr. Holmes?
Yes, I think I do. He told me he was new in the neighborhood and he was looking for a place to trade. Well, I guess we're all anxious for new business. I took the checks.
You've got those mug shots there, Ben.
Well, yeah. Here we are.
Thank you. How about these men, Mr. Loomis? Any of them look anything like the person who passed the checks on you?
No. Let's see. Now, this one, yes, it does look like the man in a way. I don't know if I could be absolutely sure.
Stanley Bubeck, same M.O.?
I beg your pardon?
Well, it looks like you're stuck with a couple of bad ones, Mr. Loomis. Probably the same man who passed checks on your druggist friend. We're doing everything we can to run this man down.
Look, what about the checks? Isn't there anything I can do about them?
No, sir, I'm sorry. Not right now. We would like to have you make out a crime report, if you will, and would you leave these checks with us?
Yeah.
Friday, Romero.
Excuse us, Mr. Loomis.
This just came in for you. Reply from Salt Lake City, Utah, on that bulletin you sent out on to Stanley Bubeck.
Yeah.
He's been in jail for 5 months.
We sent a request to Salt Lake asking him to question Stanley Bubeck if he knew of any forger who matched his description or used his M.O. Bubeck could tell us nothing. Wednesday, February 6th, we threw away the results of 2 months of investigation. We went back and started from the beginning. Despite all precautions and warnings, the checks kept coming in at the rate of half a dozen a week. The same M.O. was used, the same handwriting showed up in the signatures on the checks. Again, with the help of the staff and the statistician's office and the record bureau, we waded through hundreds of names of known checkmen and compiled a new list of 38 possible suspects. Each one fitted the general description of the forger. Each one, at some time in his forgery career, had used the same general method of operation. Well, after days of legwork, we finally boiled down the list of possibles to three names: George Roberts, James Young, and Harry L. Johansson. We got out a flyer to all the small businessmen in the areas where the forger operated. Another week passed. The worthless checks kept showing up at the rate of two and three a day. On February 21st, Ben and I answered a call from a druggist in the Echo Park district.
He bought some toothpaste and a carton of cigarettes, Sergeant. Asked me to cash a $20 check for him.
Did you ever see the man before, sir?
No, he gave me the same old story about being new in the neighborhood. That's when I remembered that police bulletin the department sent me.
Mm-hmm. Do you still have that bulletin?
No, I looked it over, and then I guess it got mislaid.
I wonder if you'd mind taking a look at these pictures here.
Not at all.
These right here.
Mm-hmm. Sure. This one right on top, that's the man.
You sure?
I am. It only happened a few hours ago. Do you know who he is?
Harry L. Johansson. That's the name we have on him.
It doesn't mean anything to me. He got real huffy when I wouldn't take his check. Stalked right out of the store. Very suspicious.
Did you follow him?
No, I told Ralph, my clerk, to follow him. Ralph.
Yeah, Mr. Butler?
You want to tell these officers about that man this morning?
Well, I followed him down the street for a block and then turned the corner. That's where I lost him.
It's too bad.
Yeah, all I got was a license number.
You are listening to Dragnet, the case history of a police investigation presented in the public interest by Fatima Cigarettes.
If you smoke a long cigarette, it will be in your interest to listen to a typical case history of a Fatima smoker.
It's the case of Northwest Airlines stewardess Jean Matson. You'll see her picture in leading magazines this week. Now, her actual signed statement.
There's one thing I really look forward to after a long flight, a good mild smoke. That's why I prefer king-size Fatima. It's milder than any other long cigarette I've tried. Yes, I agree it's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
And so do more and more smokers every day. Actual figures show extra mild Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast.
So enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself.
The king-size cigarette, which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make it extra mild.
You will prefer Fatima's much different, much better flavor and aroma.
You will agree.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Best of all, long cigarettes.
September 21st, Thursday, 3 p.m. We took the license number, which the drugstore clerk had given us. We went back to the office and checked it through DMV. We found the car was registered to a Russell Burroughs on Pico Boulevard. We checked him out. He told us that he had loaned his car the day before to a friend of his. He identified the friend as Harry L. Johansson and gave us his last known address, 614 Elderwood Avenue. We got out a broadcast on the car. The Elderwood Avenue address turned out to be a single-story wooden frame house in the southern part of the city on the edge of the industrial district. It needed a coat of paint. A woman in her elderly 30s answered the door and identified herself as Mrs. Johansson. She invited us into the living room. There was a baby playing on the floor.
I don't expect my husband home for another 2 weeks, Sergeant. He's a cosmetic salesman. Travels all over the western states.
When did he leave on this last trip, Mrs. Johansson?
The first of the month. Why, is there anything wrong?
What's the name of the cosmetics company that your husband works for?
Harrington Universal. Offices are down on East Main.
Mm-hmm. Do you know a friend of your husband's named Russell Burroughs?
Yes, I do. He's kind of a friend of the family. Please, Sergeant, if there's anything wrong, I ought to know.
We talked to Mr. Burroughs this afternoon. He told us your husband's in town. Burroughs loaned him his car.
Harry? That's silly. He's still on the road. He'd certainly let me know if he was coming back early.
You sure of that, ma'am?
Would you excuse me a minute, Sergeant? I'll have to put the baby to bed.
Certainly, ma'am.
Come on, Bonnie. I'll be back in a minute.
Kind of a funny setup, isn't it?
How do you mean?
Well, if Johansson's pushing bum checks, the money isn't going into his home here.
Wife doesn't act like she knows anything. Seems cooperative.
Well, afraid we're going to have to level with her if we're going to find out anything, huh?
Mm-hmm. You sure got a cute little girl.
I'm sorry, Sergeant.
It's perfectly all right. Just a few more questions.
Is it possible that your husband could be in town and you might not know it? I mean, could he be staying with a friend or some relatives?
No, if Harry was in town, he'd come home. Why would he stay with anyone else?
When did you last hear from your husband?
Last week. He wrote from San Francisco. The letter's right there on the mantel.
Oh, huh. Well, besides that letter, do you have any other samples of your husband's handwriting around the house?
Well, I think so, yes. Where did you say you were from?
Central Division, forgery detail.
You investigate checks, bad checks?
Yes, ma'am, that's right.
And you know about my husband?
His prison record, yes.
Harry promised me he was through with all that. He gave me his word.
Sorry, ma'am.
About a month ago, he had some extra money. He wouldn't tell me where he got it. Look, Sergeant, maybe you've made a mistake. Maybe it's not Harry at all. You're not sure, are you?
Did your husband use the phone much? I mean, for out-of-town calls, say?
No. Just that one toll call, a Long Beach number, I think. He has a business friend down there he used to call.
Do you know the number, ma'am?
I can show you. It's on last month's phone bill. Please, Sergeant, if Harry's done something wrong, he did it for us. Me and the baby. Harry's not bad.
Yes, ma'am.
He's done something. He did it for us. Harry hasn't had it easy. He wanted to get things for the baby. Clothes, a better house. All he wanted was a little happiness. A little happiness.
You got it wrong, ma'am.
Hmm?
You don't buy it with bum checks. Before we left Mrs. Johansson, we called and had a stakeout placed on the house, and then we got a sample of her husband's handwriting and the Long Beach telephone number that he was in the habit of calling. The next morning, Don Myers in handwriting compared Harry Johansson's letter with the signatures on the worthless checks. It matched. We called the Harrington Universal Cosmetics Company. They never heard of Harry Johansson. We called that Long Beach phone number. A woman answered and gave us the address where the telephone was installed. It turned out to be a swanky, modern apartment house. In apartment 18, we interviewed a good-looking brunette. She identified herself as Harry Johansson's common-law wife. She was well-dressed, and the apartment was richly furnished.
What's it all about? What do you want, Harry?
Police business. You know where he is?
Well, what's he done?
Do you know where he is?
He drove into Hollywood this morning. Might be back tonight. I don't know for sure.
Is this your apartment?
Yeah. Mine and Harry's.
You're sure that Johansson's not here now?
Of course I'm sure. Why?
Well, and you won't mind if we come in and look around, huh?
I have a right to know what it's all about.
Johansson's wanted for forgery. Now, if you want to get involved, you help him hide out.
I'm not asking for that kind of trouble. Go ahead and look.
Mm-hmm. Take the bedroom, will you, Ben?
All right.
Never mind, cop. Thanks for the help, honey.
I don't want any part of your troubles, Harry. I didn't know a thing about it, officer.
Ben.
Yeah.
You better come along too, lady.
Well, tell him, Harry. I don't know what it's about. What's the idea of getting me mixed up in this?
How do you think I was paying for this place? Taking you out and buying us clothes for you.
I don't want any part of it. Three-room apartment, a couple of dresses. That's all he ever got me.
You got no complaints, lady.
Huh?
That's more than he bought his kids. 1 p.m. Friday. Ben and I took Harry Johansson to the county jail where he was booked for suspicion of forgery. We called Mrs. Johansson and notified her. She immediately contacted friends and relatives and raised enough money for a writ to have her husband released from jail. 3 days later, Johansson was arraigned and a date set for his preliminary hearing. After the arraignment, Ben and I took him back to the county jail for rebooking.
I'd like to ask you a question, Johansson.
Yeah?
You got any money of your own left?
Why don't you stick to your own business, copper?
That family of yours is having a pretty rough time. Your wife borrowed every cent she could find to bail you out. Now, what's she going to live on?
She's got relatives.
No, there's the elevator.
Come on, Johansson.
They're not going to put me back in Folsom. Not in 100 years.
You've done 2 stretches already for hanging paper. You should have known better, mister.
You got it all figured out, haven't you, Fuzz? Well, I'm not going back.
Take it easy. You got a couple of more weeks on bail before the trial.
Yeah. A couple of weeks.
What's the matter with you? Don't you feel well?
They won't get me back to Folsom.
You're not making it any easier on yourself. All right, Archie.
Don't you cops understand? I hate it. Every lousy bit of it. I'm not going back to Folsom. I'm not going back. Now, do you understand?
It's a good idea, mister. You remember that when you get out. We booked Harry Johansson into county jail. His bail was continued, and he was released pending the trial. During the next week, along with the district attorney's office, Ben and I helped prepare the case against Johansson. 3 days before the trial opened, we had a phone call from Mrs. Johansson. She told us that her husband had disappeared. Well, there was nothing we could do until he actually failed to appear in Superior Court at the appointed time. On Monday, April 3rd, the case of the State versus Harry L. Johansson officially opened. The defendant failed to show. A bench warrant was immediately issued, and we got out a broadcast and an APB on the suspect. Stakeouts were placed in his house and at the apartment of his common-law wife. 2 days passed. No sign of him.
Nothing, Joe. Bum lady just checked it out.
Yeah. How about those two ex-con pals of Johansson's? Did you check with them?
Yeah, nothing there. I don't see how I can last out much longer. One suit of clothes, no money.
You still got a checkbook. Hmm. When did the skipper say he was coming back?
On 7:30 tonight. 7:15 now.
I'll get it. Forgery, Friday.
Joseph, this is your mother.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Ma.
I forgot to tell you when you called earlier. You're supposed to be home tonight by 8 o'clock.
What's that, Ma?
Mary Fowler. She's coming over to visit tonight, and Genevieve's coming with her.
Yeah, well, look, will you try to explain to them that I'm working and I can't get away, huh?
Well, all right, Joseph, I'll try.
If I possibly can, I'll try to make it home by 10. Will that be all right?
All right, Joseph. I'll see what I can do. Genevieve's going to be disappointed.
Yeah. If I'm later than that, don't wait up for me, huh?
Yes, all right then.
Bye, Ma.
Yes. Bye, Joseph.
Oh, hi, Skipper.
The call just came in.
Yeah.
They found Johansson.
Captain Elliott, Ben, and I drove out the highway to the Tahunga Wash. We turned off and headed into the Mount Gleason area. Captain Elliott directed us onto a dirt road. Halfway up one of the mountains, we spotted a group of cars pulled off on the shoulder of the road. We parked behind them, got out, and started over.
Who found the car, Skipper?
One of the people living back in the hills. Spotted it on his way home from work.
Mm-hmm. Coroner got here in a hurry.
Yeah. Hi, Dave.
Oh, how you doing, Joe? Captain Elliott.
How long has he been dead?
Since last night, I figure. Come on over.
You talked to the man who found Johansson's body, Dave?
Yeah, he didn't touch a thing.
What'd you find?
Powder burns on the temple, powder on the hands. Boys from homicide found the note. It's on the seat right next to him. Here it is, here. It's been checked.
Yeah, thanks.
All ties in, huh, Dave?
Pretty tight, yeah. Gene Bechtel from homicide wants to talk to you, Captain.
Okay, be right back, Joe.
Right. Who do you address the note to, Joe? His wife?
No, the girlfriend.
Look what he wrote it on.
Yeah, blank check.
The story you've just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On April 9th, an inquest was held in the coroner's office on the main floor of the Hall of Justice, Los Angeles, California. In a moment, the results of that inquest.
And now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. The working detective comes in contact with many people in his daily tour of duty, people who are willing to cooperate and those who won't even try. It's a difficult task, but the police officer has been trained to try to please everybody to the best of his ability. So, with a cigarette, the people who make Fatima try to please all long cigarette smokers. They carefully select and blend the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos to make Fatima Extra Mild, the best of all long cigarettes. Now, if you're a long cigarette smoker like I am, smoke Fatima. Every pack is extra mild. Fatima.
On April 9th, the coroner's jury returned a verdict that the death of Harry L. Johansson was caused by a gunshot wound in the head, self-inflicted. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, the best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet from Los Angeles.
Coming up, Duffy's Tavern. More good times on NBC.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or an early grave. There's no other end. But they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's transcribed story, The Fox's Tail.
There are some times when the phone just never should have been invented. Hello, Marlowe speaking.
This is Orrin Metcalf. You remember me, don't you, Marlowe?
Oh, sure, barrister. What can I do for you?
Meet me here at the Blue Chip Bar at once, Marlowe.
Look, I can hardly hear you. Speak up, will you, Orrin?
The Blue Chip Bar.
Yeah?
It's a miserable cafe on Melrose near La Brea.
Melrose near La Brea?
Yes. I'm in a booth, the last one on your right as you enter. But be careful, Phil. We can't afford to be seen. And please hurry. I'll pay you handsomely.
To do what, Orrin?
To impersonate a dead man.
The Blue Chip was an indelicate assortment of stale smells, surrounding pictures of Lady Godiva, some without horses, and featuring low lights, lower clientele, and the lowest grade of bar whiskey. Against that backdrop, my new client stood out like a Dresden doll in a police lineup. Orrin Metcalf, in spite of the electricity in his voice, is only 5.5 feet tall. Couldn't have weighed more than 130 pounds, including the glitter of honorary fraternity pins that dangled from his watch chain. He was maybe 50, bald, wore glasses halfway down a long nose, and at the moment was as nonchalant as a 5-inch firecracker with a sputtering fuse.
Quickly, Bill. Quickly. Sit down, sit down. Listen carefully.
It's going to be hard in here, but go ahead.
I am representing a man named Kubion in a lawsuit. Rudolf Kubion.
Yeah?
He's a manufacturing chemist. Hungarian-born. At present, Phil, in a sanitarium. The nervous system will take just so much, you know?
Yeah, I know. And look, this Rudolf Kubion is suing or being sued? Which?
He's suing. And nobody less than his former employer, the eminent Justin Shepherd.
Justin Shepherd. Well, he, turns out cosmetics, doesn't he? Makeup, lipstick, that kind of stuff?
Yes. Stuff, Marlowe. Which includes a new and revolutionary nail polish that's worth a fortune.
Which was invented by your client and stolen from him by Justin Shepherd, huh?
Exactly. We're suing for $250,000 in damages, Marlowe. But we'll settle out of court for $150,000 in cash.
Hello.
Not a cent less. Now, the trial, Phil, has, Oh, wait.
What? What's the matter?
Oh, bait, John.
Oh.
Some brandy, please. Cognac.
Cognac? You're kidding, Pop. Like I said, what'll it be?
All right, Junior. Two beers, skip the chatter. We gotta catch a train.
Okay. Be antisocial.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, Popplesway!
Isn't that awful? You were talking about the trial, Orrin?
Oh, yes. Now, the whole point, Phil, is that every witness we had at the outset has so far either been bought off or frightened away by Shepherd and his crew.
Hmm.
With one exception.
You're acing the hole, huh?
Yes, a man named Max Redman.
Hmm.
He worked with Rudolf Kubion years ago in Chicago, when Kubion first perfected the lacquer base, which makes the nail polish formula so valuable.
Mm.
Redmond's testimony could have swung everything our way. And Justin Shepherd found this out.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. What do you mean, could have, Orrin? Huh?
Two beers is ordered. 30 cents, gents.
Here, yeah, we're even.
Thanks.
Ah, now, Marlowe, the dead man I spoke of and Max Redmond are one and the same.
Shepherd murderer?
Worse. He drove Max Redmond to suicide, Marlowe. The man shot himself an hour ago.
I don't follow that.
Well, Redmond was staying here in L.A. with his wife. Now, I'll tell you the address in a moment. It's nearby. And although neither Shepherd nor his cronies ever got to see Redmond, they knew where he was and where he came from. With that, they went to work.
Black man?
Oh, yes. Years ago, Redmond got in a jam. I have no idea what it was, something that he was conscience-stricken about, and Shepherd uncovered it, then got through to Redmond on the phone. He struck home.
His blackmail price was Redmond's silence, huh?
Right you are. Shepherd told him to get out of town. But when I talked to Redmond an hour ago, he was positive that Shepherd would demand more in the future. Redmond was nearly hysterical, said he wished he'd never heard of me or Rudolf Kubion. And then he hung up. Well, when I got to his apartment, I found him dead, shot by his own hand, his pistol at his side. Oh, it was awful.
Yeah. Tell me, Oren, what about Redmond's wife?
Well, her name is Louise. She's out of town right now. He was afraid for her and made her go away.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, Phil, you see what I'm getting at, don't you? The reason I want you to work for me?
Yeah, I think so. Shep and his buddies don't know Redmond's killed himself, and if I give the impression by posing as Redmond that he's still alive and not leaving town, Shepard will figure that his blackmail angle didn't work, huh? He'll get together with you and settle before tomorrow morning when Redmond would have taken the witness stand.
Precisely, Phil.
Yeah.
150,000 settlement as against a court award of $250,000 means a saving of $100,000 to Shepard. He'll pay it as long as he thinks Redmond's still alive and willing to testify. Well, now, will you do it, Marlowe?
Poses Redmond, huh?
There's $1,000 in it for him.
I don't know.
$1,000, Phil. And Rudolph Cuvillon, helpless in the sanitarium. And Max Redmond.
It's an awful lot to turn down, isn't it, Aaron? Huh?
Thank you, Phil. Thank you. Now then, here's the deal.
Oh, wait a minute. How about
No questions. Every minute counts.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've got Redmond's top coat right here. Now, you put it on when you leave. And here are the keys to his apartment. It's the Garden Court Apartments on South Ogden.
South Ogden?
Yes, right. Uh-huh. Now, you sneak inside. Then a minute later, very obviously, go out again. Get into his car. It's a new green Nash. Drive up into the Hollywood Hills along Lookout Road.
Why there?
Well, Redmond drove up there a lot. Now, later, return to the apartment. You'll probably be followed, as Redmond always was. And the man will be big and muscular. And in a black coupe. Now, once they know that Redmond... Well, that's you, of course.
Yeah, sure.
Doesn't intend to leave town. There may be an attempt on your life. So watch your step. Getting killed as Redmond destroys the illusion we're out to create.
That's not all it destroys.
Eh?
May destroy me. It played as outlined. A minute after I drove Redmond's car out of his garage and conspicuously signaled a left turn with a plaid sleeve, I picked up my escort. His headlights stayed in my rearview mirror all the way along Sunset Boulevard and then up into the hills along Lookout Road. I drove slowly until I cleared a hairpin turn and spotted a flat open lot about 100 yards ahead and to my right. It overlooked the city below and was dotted with cement bags, piles of lumber, and bulldozers that had gone to bed hours ago. I swerved off the road sharply, cut my lights and parked close to the edge of the cliff. Then I piled out of the car and quickly set up the oldest trick in the book. I took off the plaid coat, tossed it over a shoulder-high board jutting out of a lumber pile, topped it with my hat and ran for cover behind the bulldozer. I got there just as the black coupe pulled in, cut its lights, and ground to a stop. Then I saw something big and beefy get out and start toward the coat, an ugly, snub-nosed gun in hand. I reached for my .38 and slowly moved through the ankle-deep weeds until I was only a few feet behind him. When he fired at the coat, I was only inches away.
What the...
Does that make it my turn?
Don't try it. You're not Redmond.
And not a lot of people. Drop your gun. Go on.
What are you going to do?
I'll ask the questions. What's your name?
Gaffney. Earl Gaffney.
Working for Justin Shepard?
No. I was just...
You're just a liar! That's nothing compared to what's in store for you.
No, quit. I work for Shepard, all right.
And you were tagging me, thinking I was Redmond, to see if I was going out of town.
Yeah. I had orders to knock you... knock Redmond off if he didn't go straight for the airport. But that's all honest. I don't know anymore.
Get up. Oh. Now walk over to that tool bin there. Oh. Open it and get in. Yeah. Go on. Oh. Keep moving and keep your hands open. All right. Now, I want to have a little chat with Justin Shepard. His home address, what is it?
He ain't got one. He stays at hotels. Right now, it's the Beekman Plaza in Beverly Hills. Now, quit, will you? That's all I know.
Sure. You see, Earl, I believe you. You've got such an honest face. For a killer. Sweet dreams, Buster.
Dozen gladiolas and 12 golden iris. Yes. And deliver them here to the desk of the Beekman Plaza Hotel. No, it's not in Santa Monica. It's in Beverly Hills. It has been for years. Goodbye. Stupid, stupid people.
Yeah, they're just everywhere, aren't they?
Indeed. Oh, may I help you, sir?
Yes, I was looking for Mr. Justin Shepherd. Is he in?
Oh, yes, and sir, you could almost reach out and touch him.
No, really?
Yes, that's he over there, reading the paper in the Louis XIV chair.
The Louis XIV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see him? The short, round man to one side of that woman wearing that stunning taffeta.
That what?
Stunning taffeta. You see, it's appliqued with those bright red roses.
Oh, yeah. Couldn't miss him. Yeah. Turn right at the stunning taffeta. Goodbye.
You're quite welcome, sir. Welcome indeed. Goodbye.
Mr. Shepherd?
That's right.
My name is Philip Marlowe. I'm a private detective.
I know. I've heard of you.
Oh?
What's on your mind, Mr. Marlowe?
A chemist.
What about him? What does he have to do with me?
Earl Gaffney.
Who is Earl Gaffney?
A louse who missed, like the rest of them will. Max Redmond is still alive, and I intend to keep him that way. Good night, Mr. Shepherd. See you in court. The effect was great. The fat man's mouth fell open and his chins jellied all over his chest. I let it go at that. The illusion was established. As far as Justin Shepherd and company were concerned, Max Redmond was very much alive and kicking up the kind of trouble that they didn't want. But 20 minutes later, when I let myself into the dead man's apartment and walked into his bedroom, I knew the illusion was only an illusion. Max Redmond's body was sprawled at a crazy angle across the bed. I wondered what he could have possibly done to take this easy way out. I stopped wondering when the front door closed. It was a woman with the deepest brown eyes I'd ever seen.
What are you doing here? Who are you?
My name is Max Redmond.
You're lying. Where is Max? Tell me, where is he?
He's in the bedroom. You a friend of his?
I'm his wife, and I'm going to speak to him. Don't try to stop me.
I won't, Mrs. Redmond. Go ahead.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, Bing Crosby climaxes his season on CBS this Wednesday night with a terrific lineup of top talent. Arthur Godfrey, Bob Hope, Perry Como, and the four Crosby sons, who've attracted nationwide attention as his guests earlier this year. Bing, Arthur Godfrey, Bob Hope, Perry Como, and the youngsters will be heard in a great musical roundup of the season's top tunes. So be listening this Wednesday when on most of these same CBS stations, the Bing Crosby Show comes along with these top guests. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Fox's Tale.
Louise Redmond's dark, troubled eyes stared at the bedroom door for an instant. Then she darted past me and inside. When she saw him, she froze, her eyes on the gun at the dead man's side. One hand trembled toward her mouth. Hang out of yourself, baby.
Max. Oh, Max. Max, why did you do it? Why?
Your husband had proof that a fat buzzard named Justin Shepherd swindled a fortune from Rudolph Kuvian, an old friend of his. Max was going to offer that proof tomorrow morning in court.
He wouldn't kill himself because of that.
Well, there must have been something in his past that he couldn't live with any longer.
What?
Do you know what it was, Louise?
I don't believe any of this. You were in here posing as Max. You're responsible for his death. But you won't get away
Louise,
with it.
Louise, give me that gun. Little fool, let go. I said let go. That's better. You're smart enough to give in fast anyway. Now sit down over there and listen.
Who are you? Why are you here?
I'm Philip Marlowe, hired by Orrin Metcalf. You know him?
Yes.
He found Max like that. He couldn't let Shepard know that the case against him was dead, so he hired me to keep up the illusion that Max was still alive and wrong. Metcalf is sure that Shepard will crack before morning. But we'll need your cooperation, Louise. How about it, huh?
when you took that gun away from me, you smashed my only picture of Max. You couldn't even leave me that intact.
I'm sorry. I know it's going to be tough on you, baby, but... Hey, wait a minute, wait a minute. Louise, did Max write that on the picture there?
Yes. To my Louise. With love.
Louise, listen to me now. This backhand script. Was Max left-handed?
Yes, but what is that?
He was shot in the right temple.
You mean that someone killed him?
That's the general idea, yeah.
Justin Shepherd. The man Max intended to testify against.
No, not unless he's a lot slicker than I think. But he has an assistant, a tough one named Gaffney, who was watching this place when I took over. If he did it, then followed me, he wouldn't have had a chance to report to his boss.
I don't understand. Followed you where?
Oh, to that lot on Lookout Road where Max liked to go. I caught Gaffney there and filed him away in a tool bin. I better go and have another chat with that boy right now. You wait here.
Here.
Now, look, baby, we can't quit. You've got to finish the job Max started for his old friend Kuvian, and better than that, maybe we can get Max's killer, too. Are you game?
I'll do as you say.
As I went out to Redmond's car, several things bothered me. And not the least of them were Louise Redmond's dark, deep eyes. When I got in the car, I felt the pistol that had killed Max. It was in my pocket where I dropped it after I'd taken it away from the girl. I pulled it out and looked at it. It was a Belgian Browning 765 automatic. I broke it apart and then, on a hunch, I slipped it back together, got out of the car again, and took the gun up to Louise.
I don't know much about guns, Marlowe.
All you may have to do is point it, Louise. The threat will probably be enough. In case it isn't, that's the safety catch there on the side. I'll be back as soon as I can. When I pulled out onto the vacant hilltop lot, I centered the tool bin and the headlights. I was out of the car and wading through the foot-high foxtail grass before I noticed that the stick I'd shoved through the hasp was now on the ground. I ran the rest of the way and jerked the lid open. Gaffney was gone. I started to close the lid, but stopped at something in the bottom of the bin. I'd have liked a coiled rattlesnake better. It was a glistening, sticky puddle, and it was blood. The scream had come from a hollow beside the lot. I ran toward it. Saw two kids in a parked car, scared stiff and staring into a tangle of brush in front of them.
Mister, there's a man down there. He's hurt bad.
Where? Show me.
In that brush. We both saw him. He stood up just a second ago and he started toward us. There was blood all over him. And then he fell down again.
Okay, get your girl out of here. Get back to your car.
Okay, mister. Oh, hey, holy cats. You're Philip Marlowe, the detective.
Yeah,
I've seen your picture lots of times.
All right, be a good fan and stay out of the way. The guy's dangerous. Go on.
Yeah, okay. Come on.
Gaffney. Who did it, Gaffney?
It's Frank.
Yeah?
He knew I'd spill and...
Who, Gaffney? Who knew? Who? Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Marlowe. Hey, Mr. Marlowe. Did you find him, Mr. Marlowe?
Yeah, I found him, son. He's dead.
Holy cat.
Now, look, do me a favor, will you? Get to a phone, report this to the police.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Tell them I'll get in touch with them as soon as I can.
Okay. Sure, Mr. Marlowe. Yeah, right away.
My next stop had to be Justin Shepherd's hotel. And now I had more to go on than a couple of hints from left field. Just as I pulled up in front, I saw Shepherd behind 16 cylinders of imported limousine swinging away from the curb. He seemed in no particular hurry, so I tailed him far enough to realize that he could be heading to Max Redmond's apartment. Then I took off through the side streets, wide open. I got back to the apartment in time to brace Louise for Shepherd's visit.
But, Marlowe, what can I do? Maybe I'd better...
Maybe you better let him in. Go ahead.
Yes?
Stand aside, young woman. I'm coming in.
Please do, Shepherd.
You again.
Nice of you to drop in. What have you got in the bag, lunch?
Don't be facetious. And don't worry, it's all here. I know when I'm beaten. I suppose it would be quite pointless to ask where Redmond himself is.
Completely pointless at this late date.
Very well.
Then I assume I'm to leave this with you.
That's right.
It had better be right, my boy. Believe me. Good night.
Just a minute. How come you're running your own errands?
You took care of that yourself earlier tonight. You're a competent man. You should be working for me.
Working for you has its drawbacks, Shepard. But you muffed it. Gaffney didn't die right away.
Gaffney's dead?
Marlowe, be careful.
Yeah, he lived long enough to tell me he was framed, Shepard. By you.
When you can prove that, I'll be at my hotel. But I advise you not to push your luck.
Marlowe, you let him walk out.
Yeah, the guy was right, baby. So far, we've got no proof of any of it. Except this bag and whatever is...
Money. Why, it's filled with bundles of bills.
Big ones. At least 100 grand. Oh. Holy smoke. Excuse me, will you?
Who are you calling?
Somebody will be very interested in this. You just wait and see.
Metcalf speaking.
Aaron, this is Marlowe. I'm at the Redmond place, and get this. Justin Shepard walked in here, dumped $100,000 on the table, and left again. Not a half minute ago.
At Redmond's?
Yeah.
Why, it's a bribe. We've got him, Phil. We've got him. Don't touch it. I'll be right there.
Now, wait a minute. There's more.
Yeah, go on.
Louise Redmond came back.
Louise? In the middle of this mess?
Yeah, she's here now.
Oh, must have been rough on her to find Max.
Worse than you think, because that's still not all.
What do you mean?
That you can bet your briefcase on the fact that Max didn't kill himself in the first place. He was murdered.
Sit tight, Phil. I'll be right there.
Come on in, Aaron.
The money, Marlowe. Where is it?
In the bag there on the table.
Yes. Excellent. Iron-bound evidence. Best in the world. We'll have this impounded right away. And...
Oh, Mrs. Redmond, I can't tell you how sorry I am, my dear.
Thank you, Mr. Metcalf. But I'm grateful to you and to Mr. Marlowe here that Max's death wasn't entirely without purpose, at least.
What about that, Phil? Can we prove he was murdered?
Well, the bullet entered his right temple, but he was left-handed. That's about all we got.
Simple as that. And yet it went by me completely.
I doubt we can stick anybody for it.
Why not?
Well, because his killer may be already...
Already what, Phil?
Hmm? Oh, already dead.
Another killing? Well, what are you talking about, man?
One Earl Gaffney, Shepard's gentle assistant.
What?
I locked him in a tool bin, but somebody found him there and shot him. To keep him quiet.
Justin Shepard himself. Surely. Now look, if we can't get him for Max, we'll nail him for Gaffney.
Don't count on it.
Hey, listen, we've got that fat lizard right where we want him. Now,
First of all, it won't fit, Aaron.
Why not?
If Shepard sent Gaffney to get Max, then killed Gaffney, why did he bring all this dough here to bribe a dead man?
Well, yes, you're making sense, Phil.
I knew you'd say it.
Go on.
Okay, try this for size. Max Redmond never intended to testify in court. He wasn't after a legal settlement, because then the money would go past him to Rudolph Kuvian. This bribe here is all Max was after, but somebody was in it with him.
You're crazy. How dare you say that?
Oh, she's right, Marlowe. Now you're talking like a fool.
Am I? Max no doubt got into a beef with his partner over the split of the bribe and was shot. That's a guess, Soren, but this isn't. Gaffney got it because Max's killer couldn't figure how much Gaffney had heard and seen in here. He couldn't take a chance, you see? But whoever killed Gaffney had to wade through the same weeds I did in that vacant lot to get to him. And most of the weeds up there are foxtail grass. You know the kind that comes off on your clothes, that sticks in your socks like little darts. That's right, Aaron. Take a look. Your Argyles are loaded with the stuff.
I don't have to look. You're a bright boy, Phil.
Thanks.
It went just as you outlined it. Up to this point.
I'm sorry you got so much of it right, because you can't think of everything.
You might be surprised. Don't reach for your gun, Aaron. I'll drop you. It was a filthy scheme. Come on, hand it over. Your gun.
Why, surely. Here you are.
Now you drop it, Marlowe. Go on.
Well, the heartbroken little wife.
With the very same gun you so generously gave me.
That's what I meant, Marlowe. You can't think of everything. Louise and I are going away tonight together, and we're taking that money with us.
Stand still, Marlowe. I know more about guns than I pretended.
Sure you do, sure. I had a hunch about you early tonight, baby. Your homecoming was too pat, and you know what? You didn't bring back so much as an overnight bag. And what's more, when I took that gun away from you, you practically handed it to me. You were acting all the way.
I'm not now. I'll kill you, Marlowe.
Louise, shoot him! Shoot!
I can't!
Shoot!
The gun, Oren, it won't fire!
No fooling. I took one of the parts out before I gave it back to you, sweetheart. You couldn't make that go off with a blowtorch.
Oren, help me!
That's right, Oren. Help the lady.
Oren.
Believe me, sister, you'd get the same thing right now, but for one good reason. I'm going to need you intact in that car tomorrow morning. By the time the police showed up, Oren Metcalf, dynamic barrister, and Louise Redman, beautiful dreamer, were already coming apart at the seams. 2 hours later, when I finally got away from it, they were still screaming hysterical insults at each other. Now, before I went home, I stopped by the sanitarium just long enough to shake hands with Rudolf Kuvian, who turned out to be a nice, quiet, thoughtful old guy. And I assured him of a fair shake that was long overdue. I guess it made him happy. It was hard to tell, because the look on his face said that maybe the real price, in things other than money, had been much too high. Well, that's the way it is with some characters. They're human.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in tonight's transcribed cast were Howard McNear, Lou Krugman, Rick Vallon, Parley Bear, Georgia Ellis, and Hugh Thomas. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time there was a fish that talked with a lisp, a hot blonde with cold cash on her mind, and a corpse with dirty French cuffs. And I mixed with them all without ever getting out of my own bed.
This Wednesday night on CBS, Dr. Christian will bring you the prize-winning script in this year's nationwide contest. CBS cordially invites you to hear Dr. Christian starring Gene Herschelt every Wednesday on most of these same CBS stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. You can save for your future today the United States Savings Bond way. Savings bonds are one of the surest, safest investments you can make because they're backed by Uncle Sam himself. You are sure of getting back $4 for every $3 you invest when the bonds mature in just 10 years. Safe? Because even if the bonds are lost, destroyed, or stolen, your government will replace them at no charge. And bonds are simple and convenient to buy. Ask your employer to set aside an amount of money from your pay, the amount you decide on. Automatically, systematically, you'll purchase savings bonds. If you're self-employed, have your bank purchase a bond a month for you regularly. Save for your independence. Buy United States savings bonds. This is CBS, where Burns and Allen are heard every Wednesday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for Case Closed this week, but the old-time radio continues at RelicRadio.com. I'll have a new episode of Relic Radio Thrillers out tomorrow. Of course, the Horror and Strange Tales podcasts on the weekend. Don't forget to visit RelicRadio.com in between now and then. If you want more from Case Closed, more from Dragnet, Marlowe, all the other podcasts are found there as well. Our Shoutcast stream is there too, and our donate button. Relic Radio is supported by its listeners. If you'd like to help out, give that donate button a click. You find more information on the website or visit donate.relicradio.com. That'll send you to the page with more information, too. I'll be back next Wednesday with Unit 99 and the lineup on another episode of Case Closed.